This is Impact, a daily look at how we are coping with the coronavirus in Nevada. I'm Carrie Kaufman. What can I do to help? No doubt we've all asked that question without even thinking about it when we walk into a party and see the host scurrying around trying to get last-minute cooking or plating done. What can I do to help? When we volunteer at our kids' schools, what can I do to help? When we do walkathons to raise money for cancer or sign people up to vote, humans do things, and most of us want to do things to make the world a better place. I'm a journalist because I want to connect with people, and I want to connect them with information. Artists, actors, clowns, musicians, painters connect people not with information, but with images, drama, laughter. We're going to talk today about different ways people are doing something in this time when we feel utterly helpless, and staying home, while the experts say it's the best thing we can do, just doesn't feel like it's enough.
Well, what do you know? Lockdown is my specialty.
But first, we're going to do the numbers before we actually get into looking at what people are doing during this coronavirus crisis. Of course, we check the Washington Post map, the Washington Post coronavirus map. You look at it these days, and Europe is just blowing up. Italy has more than 86,000 cases. Spain has 64,000. Germany has 50,000. So if you look at the area of Europe, France has about 33,000. It's more in that one little area than it is the entire United States. And yet we are the country that has the most coronavirus cases, with 101,000, up from 82,000 yesterday. Now, these are reported deaths. There are 1,600 reported deaths. And these are reported cases and reported deaths. We don't know how many people still haven't been tested and how many of the people who have it are in better shape and how many are in worse shape. According to the Southern Nevada Health District, we're at 443 reported cases and 10 deaths. Pretty much the same as yesterday. Unless those numbers haven't been updated, then we're holding pretty steady. I should note that 41% of the people who are diagnosed with COVID-19 in Nevada are in the 25 to 49 age range. That is the highest percentage of any group. In national news today, Congress has passed a $2 trillion stimulus package. It's massive, and it's so massive, I'm not exactly clear on how it will impact Nevadans or when we might be seeing relief. I'm going to have more on that next week. As we head into our second Friday in shutdown, it's worth noticing the people that would be at work now. Marcus Weiss is one of those people. He's a clown with Cirque du Soleil. And Sarah O'Connell is a director and teacher and editor and arts advocate. Sarah is actually someone mere words can't describe, but we're going to try. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Hello.
Thank you, Karen.
Hello. I'm heartened by the fact that Nevada's numbers don't seem to be going up. I'm also a bit afraid that they're not going up because people aren't getting tested. What are you feeling? What is your feeling about this? How people are reacting to this right now in Nevada?
Well, I'm glad we're home. When I think in terms of health concerns, because we don't have a denominator to the math problem. Mm. So when we talk about infection rates, death rates, survival rates, all of that, we don't know that because we haven't even tested just randomly people who don't think they're infected, right, to see if they have antibodies.
Right.
And so I find the numbers related to who's got it doesn't tell me as much as the numbers about respirators and ICU beds, because that's the only demonstrable fact number out of all of this that I can see.
And the fact that we have fewer ICU beds and respirators than it seems like we are going to need.
Right. So you can kind of get a sense of that by the way people are pouring into the hospitals, or that one website that shows the fever map from that thermometer that can sync to the internet. I don't know if you've seen this on the news, but because that's scientific evidence. But it's not, it's much more of a sample than what we've got with these, the lack of tests.
Right.
We can't take a real sample of anywhere.
Right. So I'm going to extend this question to you, Marcus. What's the feeling for you, since we don't really have evidence?
Well, I think, you know, the way that I feel is probably also how, you know, how a lot of other people, must be feeling out there, is that this lack of certainty, right? I mean, it goes into the lack of certainty about facts, the lack of certainty even about the science. And I mean, and some of that is just because we don't know much about the COVID-19, right? The coronavirus itself. And then some of it is just how the facts are disseminated, how things are distributed, how people get news, you know, because these days a lot of people are getting news from, you know, social media or, mm-hmm. and if they're not home, maybe they're not even driving in their cars as much, you know, the universe willing, they're listening still to this station and NPR and that kind of a thing. But where are people getting their news? And so some people, I think, aren't even getting as much news, or turning it, or maybe even turning it off. So, that's kind of what I'm afraid of too.
So what you're saying is fewer people are listening to us journalists now because they're not driving in their cars. I didn't even think about that. But
I think about that.
Okay. I will also say that I have to do this every day. Every day I have to look at various sites. I look at the health site. I look at newspapers in California. I always check the Washington Post map. I look at newspapers mm-hmm. in where there are hot spots mm-hmm. in New York and what have you. And I kind of have to walk away. Like I check that before I go and take my daily walk or bike ride
because
it's just a little much. It's just a little much.
It's just a little much. And I think, and then that, just like even before this crisis, you know, people, you know, reacting in that way and then just shutting off and just doing something is affecting people's behavior, you know, whether they're still going out or whatever it may be. And so, which in turn then affects how this virus and this pandemic is unfolding, you know? So I think, that alone. So I think it's a challenge how to keep the information flow going and still keeping people alert and tuned in,
right.
Literally and figuratively, you know?
On the other hand, Sarah, I feel like what we need to know is, should we stay in? Should we keep staying in? And when we can come out again? And what the symptoms are? And how wonderful our families are. Like, I feel like it's really hyper focusing us right now, and we don't necessarily need to know all the little details about how Congress and Trump are fighting or whatever. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I certainly think that the reporters often cover the drama of what goes on in government instead of what the actual action is.
Let's not.
And maybe it's because I'm a theater director, but I do drama for a living. I want reporters to do the news. So
I'm going to use that quote.
It is a little bit. They sometimes they look like teenagers at lunch when they're talking about politicians, and so it's that part is aggravating. I suppose one of the best. If there's a silver lining to the crazy past few years we've been living through, it's the part where all these government, former public servants have come out to explain, like former DOJ people and all these different government agencies. And we've gotten such a good education on what these different departments actually are supposed to do that we... And I kind of hoped that with all of that good example they've given and the way they just give the facts... would rub off on journalists more. I think maybe it has a little bit, but they couldn't wait for another presidential election primary season to try to go back to their old formulas.
Right.
And I thought, oh, no, you know, this was, it just should be instructive. And they just, it's like they're desperate to get back to some kind of normal themselves. And we suffer the consequences of that.
That's a whole other broadcast, right? That's a whole other conversation.
Right. Sorry, people, I always do that.
People, you do, and so do I, right? That's people like Jay Rosen in New York are very much about, talk to people and get a sense of what this election is about and what the issues are and drill down. down mm-hmm. to why people are feeling the way they're feeling. Don't make it a horse race. And he warned people, and he's been saying this for a few years now, 2020 comes right. up and they start making it a horse race again. So yeah. So let me get to you, Marcus, and get to the yes. nitty gritty of your story. You have been working for Cirque, which show?
Yes, I'm a backup clown for O at the Bellagio, okay. and I've been doing that for a little over 5 years.
Okay, and were you full time or part time?
I was this summer. I had a long stint, but I've been a backup there for a long time. I was a full time clown also over at Celestia by the Stratosphere for a while, and I was full time at Le Rev, but that was before. That was 8 years. But when this happened, I was a backup.
So you were on part time status. So how did you get the news that the shows would be closing?
I got via email. It was all an email. You know, the people who were full time at the time, I think they also got it via email because they had been they had a full company meeting. I think there was full company meetings as well, but I couldn't go. You know, I wasn't going into the space at that time. Yeah. So then via a lot of really informative emails, there was Danny Lenamar, the CEO of the whole company, did a video. Made a video to the entire company that everybody was instructed to view ahead of time. You know, hey, an announcement is coming, and then everybody sort of tuned into that and saw it right after it was released. So,
and any
that's how
have
the
you
news,
heard
that's how the news came out, and then individual you know sort of individual emails went out after that.
Got it. So have you heard of you know, I think they had 7 shows here. When yeah. this ends, are they just going to go right back to, you know, business as usual?
Well, I'm not sure. You know, I don't, you know, none of that information is, you know, that's all speculation, even on my part. You know, of course, I talk to colleagues about things that may or may not happen. But, you know, I imagine, you know, a lot of these, a lot of the employees, even the ones who aren't on tour, you know, had to go home. Some of them had certain kinds of visas, and there was, you know, and Cirque extended a little bit of support their way as well, who are on a particular kind of visa. But some people also went home, and they're sort of, you know, they're overseas again. Mm. So I'm not sure how quickly they could organize coming back and doing regular shows because people are all over the, you know, might be spread out all over the world, so they may not even be here anymore. I'm not sure. You know, I'm sure that you know, Cirque knows. They sent out an email asking everybody where they were at this time, and they probably had individual communication with regard to that. But if it came back, they would have to, you know, everybody would have to be back in Vegas. They would have to decide how many shows they're doing a week. They would have to reintegrate people, you know, rehearse again, that kind of a thing. But but starting up at full pace, like horses out of a gate, I'm not sure that could happen right away. I'm not sure.
You are listening to Impact, a nightly show on KUNV, looking at the social, educational, and economic impact of the coronavirus in Nevada. Tonight, we're looking at the people who are doing things to help. Artists do things to help, and that's how we are starting the show. We're doing most of the show. We're going to go to people in rural areas who are doing things to help a little later on in the show. You just heard Marcus Weiss. He is an actor and a clown who has worked for Cirque du Soleil. And Sarah O'Connell is a director and editor and writer and all-around community activist. And that's what I want to get to, Sarah. When I asked Marcus if everything was just going to be able to start up again, you kind of groaned, right? You have been leading the arts in Las Vegas since I met you, in 2016, when you came in for an interview after starting Eat More Art. And it's just grown exponentially. So what are you hearing from people, and what do you think is going to happen when this is all over?
Well, it's, you know, I worry both about the arts organizations and then the individual human beings who are our arts community. And I feel like we won't know how the organizations are doing until we know how stabilized the human beings are, because all the arts organizations are their people and their talent.
Right.
And most of the small nonprofits here exist because that was the leftover money, in air quotes, the money sacrificed by a lot of individuals who worked commercially in the trade show and on the strip part of the arts and production industry here. And then they would take whatever they had left and they would put it into Vegas Theater Company or, you know, Poor Richard Players or Public Fit or all in Majestic Rep. And so the people who build our arts community are already our professional artists and craftspeople. So if they're struggling to put food on their own table, you know, what could they possibly give to a theater company?
Right.
And so that's the sort of the first level of, like, if, you know, you think about the governor worrying about health first, economy second.
Yeah.
Well, in our case, our health, you know, it's our human health and stability is our arts community, you know, so you have to take care of that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, a theater company is a living, breathing thing, just like a small business, you know, and we consider small businesses that are either owned by artists or that work in a community of artists are part of the arts and culture community because it's all the same ecosystem.
Right.
So if it's a bar on Main Street, like Rebar, you're next to Majestic Rep, you're part of the arts community.
Yeah, you know, actually, we were talking to Troy Hurd a little earlier in the week about that. You started the Arts Table a few months ago, not because of the coronavirus, but because you wanted to bring artists together and people show up, but have been showing up. They're not right now, once a month. And now you're leading the response, the artistic response to the coronavirus. What are you doing exactly?
Okay, well, Ebor Art Vegas was actually founded in, what was that, 5 years ago?
Right.
And it was actually because I was very concerned with what had happened to the arts community after the economic crisis of 2008, where there's no local arts service organization. There was no lightning rod for all the different culture groups to come to and try to survive together. And so...
And I should note that Eat More Art is a website where you could go and get information on all the cultural happenings in Las Vegas. So go on.
Yeah.
Eatmoreart.com.
Eatmoreartvegas.com.
Okay.
And that's basically, it's something that's there to help connect the community to our arts and the artists to each other so that we're just growing our community as we develop our professional mid-level market that we were forming with these smaller companies, so that your people who come out of arts training have companies to hone their skills, and then they become someone who might be on the strip. And that's Eat More Arts, that middle sector. And so we're the independent arts. And so that particular group did not survive the 2008 crisis very well when there was calls for relief. They were overlooked, so there were no programs to stimulate their economy. The venues they used to perform in were either shut down, gentrified, or raised their prices. So they really had, we had an era where a lot of people were frustrated and not producing any work, but the artists were still here. So
Eat
More Art Vegas was meant to be a community building exercise, both promotion, but also in terms of getting artists to come together to support each other materially as business partners, you know, in the community. So we have these monthly
Got about a minute, Sarah. I'm warning you. You got about a minute and a half.
So we have these monthly meetings where the artists were coming together and they started to form relationships. And now that we're all separated, we still are trying to keep those relationships going. So we set up a coronavirus response group to keep people who are local in the cultural community focused on how to help each other through the COVID crisis.
And you are doing a petition, right? I mean, you're communicating with the government as much as possible and with our congresspeople as much as possible to make sure that artists are counted in the help that we might be able to get, right?
That's right, because the whole point is to raise our visibility and build good relationships. So that visibility really belongs, we have to raise it with our own public officials who know the community as well. So right away, we started a petition to make sure that they knew rent was an issue for local artists and arts organizations, because mm-hmm. we knew it would be the first concern. And here it is, the last, the biggest unresolved problem that's the most immediate concern for everyone right now.
Right. It's not in the, the congressional bill, the $2 trillion bailout, right?
Correct. It's not in the bill.
Right.
And people, even if you're signing up for unemployment, it probably won't cover that, cover your rent. And even if you could get the money and it would cover it, it's not coming fast enough because it's so hard to sign up. So people are still getting threatened by their landlords.
Okay. Marcus, you have about 20 seconds to tell us what you are doing now in your downtime.
Listen, I am still teaching online at UNLV. Okay, so that's keeping me sane. But it's also a steep learning curve, so I'm spending a lot of time doing that. I'm spending family time, but I'm also connecting with other artists in the community online, keeping the spirits, keeping the spirits up, and contributing as much as I can to doing that, and just sharing stories with each other online.
I love
social media.
You ask an actor, you say, you give a time limit to an actor, and then he starts speaking really fast, and you can understand everything that he has said. Thank
really?
You very much. Yeah, it was really good. I love actors. Sarah O'Connell is going to be joining us every Friday, and we're going to be talking about arts issues in as this coronavirus moves forward. Marcus Weiss, I will definitely have you back on again. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Carrie. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
I'm going to bring in Sherry Huffman. Sherry is one of the co-owners of the Goldfield Emporium, which is in Goldfield, Nevada, in Esmeralda County. If you have driven recently from Las Vegas to Reno or Las Vegas to Carson City, you have no doubt stopped in the Goldfield Emporium. It is now closed, but Sherry is still working to help people combat this virus and make and help them feel like they're doing something. Sherry, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you so much.
So, I'm really sorry to hear that the Emporium is closed, and I hope that it reopens pretty soon after this. But what is it that you're doing? What was the impetus to start helping people?
Well, we had just started, we had reopened after remodeling and stuff, and we weren't open for very long, and we started the Blue Burrow Art Gallery, which we do community and social art there.
Wow, cool.
While we were getting ready to do all these things, then we had the virus come, and we decided to close. I sat down with my partners, my husband and my best friend, and with all the talk about face masks and the inability to be able to purchase them now, I thought, well, you know, I have really been blessed by people giving me things to get the Blue Burrow started at the Emporium, and I received quite a bit of fabric, and I thought, I can make face masks for everybody in town.
Mm.
And we have, I would say, a good 75% of Goldfield is senior citizens here.
Which means that you or they are at higher risk for catching the virus. I think it's interesting that you decided to give the masks to people in your town. Is that because healthcare workers need the masks that are made and sold in stores?
Most people just don't have the money, and that is correct. The poor healthcare workers, they're having a problem, and I would be more than happy to make some for anybody. Even reached out to the town next to us in Tonopah and called out to anyone who would be interested in leading something like this in their communities, that I would help them.
And that
I just think everybody should have one.
And that is how I found you, actually, because Sarah Walker in Pahrump said that she was getting fabric from you to help her make masks. Healthcare in Goldfield, if somebody should get sick with coronavirus or anything, really, how far do you have to go?
The closest town is Tonopah, which is almost 30 miles away. There is two clinics there now, but a lot of us end up going to either Hawthorne, which is even further, Bishop was really further, or Pahrump or Las Vegas. So we have no health care facility at all or a doctor here in Goldfield.
And you have to drive at least 30 miles. You have to drive 30 miles to get groceries, too. The Tonopah is the closest grocery store, correct?
Exactly.
So you are hunkered down in your house making masks. What is it? What's the message that you want to give to people who are listening to this?
Just do what you can. Go and find, if you have an elderly neighbor or any of your neighbors, see if you're going to go out to the store, see if you could buy them something and bring it back. Help each other. That's the whole thing. We're all in this together. Every single one of us can do something for someone else. And even if we touch somebody's life in some small way, it's worth it all.
We've been talking to Sherry Huffman, who is a co-owner of the Goldfield Emporium in Goldfield, Nevada. If you are ever driving on I-95 north from Las Vegas or south from Reno, stop in and say hello. Sherry, thank you for joining us today. I really appreciate this.
Well, thank you so much for calling me.
So you heard Sherry talking about the fact that she's giving out masks all over the state. One of the people that she is giving out masks to is Sarah Walker. And Sarah is actually the reason that I heard about Sherry. Sarah, welcome to the program. And talk to me about what you are doing in terms of making masks for people.
Thank you. I started working on this about a month ago, and somebody gave me a better pattern that will go together faster. Mm. Our idea was, because of the need, we wanted to get masks out to the shut-in, the elderly, and the children, so that that would free up the medical-grade masks for that situation.
That makes sense. And you are in Pahrump, I should say. So Sherry was in Goldfield, and you are in Pahrump. How did you two connect?
My sister tagged me in a post, and then I just said, yes, I'll make masks, but we're in rural areas, and so the supplies, even if we wanted to do it, we can't just go down to the store because sometimes it's not there.
Uh-huh.
And I just said, well, what do you need? And, you know, it went from there.
That's really fascinating. So you're both in rural areas. You connect through Facebook. I see you make a comment on Facebook, and here we are talking, and I've got two interviews out of that already. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to share the information. That's the biggest thing to keep people calm right now. I ran a food bank in Utah for 3.5 years.
Right.
So I'm posting tips on, okay, look in your cupboard and tell me what you have. Tonight we did stuffing waffles. If you run out of bread, you can make stuffing into bread for your sandwiches. Out of waffle, you know, your waffle machine. So it's just stuff like that to keep people going.
That's brilliant. And where are you posting this? On your Facebook page?
If you want to follow me on Sarah Walker, it's the one where I live in Pahrump, and then we have a local closed group called I Need Help in Pahrump.
Hmm.
And if you just message me, then you can start following me, and you know, I'll post it in both places. That way people get the information that they need.
You got it. Thank you very much, Sarah. I appreciate that. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for your time.
Stuffing bread using a waffle machine. I love that. We're going to be checking in with Sarah in the near future. Another episode, actually the second week or the first full week of Impact, has come and gone. Impact is a special production with KUNV, CCSD Parents, No Racism in Schools. I'm Carrie Kaufman with the Nevada Voice. Thanks to Sarah O'Connell and Marcus Weiss for joining us today. They were wonderful guests. And to Sherry Huffman and Sarah Walker for giving us great ideas to connect us to the communities we live in. Please share your ideas with us and tips on who's doing good and what people can do to stay sane during this time. You can go to Nevada Voice's Facebook page. It's just Facebook/Nevada Voice. The link for this podcast will be posted there. We'll be back Monday at 7 p.m. Thank you for listening to Impact.